received along with our naval units at sea. A large object traveling at supersonic speed is headed over the North Atlantic toward the east coast of the United States.
This is H.B. Kaltenborn speaking. Here in the nation's capital, there is anxiety and concern, but no outward sign of panic.
And we are back. My name is Don Ecker, the show UFOs Tonight, and joining me in studio, Mr. Dwight Schultz. And joining us on telephone is Mr. Robert Wise. Mr. Wise, it is truly a pleasure to have you with us here this evening.
Thank you, Tom. Delighted to be with you.
Sir, you know, whenever we talk about the subject of unidentified flying objects, invariably, the movie that you directed back in that was released back in 1951 was the first and probably still the best. There were two films that really defined the phenomena back in those days, and they both came out about the same time. Your film, The Day the Earth Stood Still, which basically presented the idea of alien visitation as something that would be very beneficent for humanity, and Howard Hawks, The Thing, which gave us the idea of alien visitation as something to be very fearful of. The Day the Earth Stood Still, what was the genesis of this film? And it was so well done, even today, 40-odd years later, it stands up as one of the great sci-fi movies of all time. What was the genesis and the basis behind that?
The original material was a short story. That's a science fiction short story by a fellow named Bates, I believe. It's been a long time now, you understand. But that was what we started with. And then Julian Blaustein, the producer, and Edmund North, the screenwriter, got on it originally and developed it into roughly what is on the screen. And I came on after they had done a first draft script and got my licks in on it. And that's what's up on the screen now. But it started with a short story.
Well, Mr. Wise, I understood, and a gentleman that we both know, Mr. Russ Jones, who is working on a documentary on the subject of unidentified flying objects, had told us that he had heard that there was actually some official cooperation and information that had been released to help make this film. Do you know anything about that?
No. Never heard anything like that at all.
Nothing whatsoever. Well, now, Michael Rennie, who portrayed the alien, did a tremendously fantastic job.
He was, I think, a marvelous asset to us, because Michael had been signed by 20th Century Fox just shortly before we were going with the picture, and he had never been seen on the screen before. He was an English stage actor that Gerald Zanuck had seen on a trip to London and signed, and he called us and said, "Hey, there's fellow I just signed, I think he might be just the guy you're looking for your man in your science fiction film." And I think the fact that Michael was, completely unknown to the screen audience, and so somebody fresh and new. And he also was rather tall and thin, had a rather ascetic look. I think helped give a lot of credibility to his performance and to accept him as a being from the outer space.
Do you think that the film itself, now I honestly do not know how versed you've stayed as far as the overall UFO phenomenon in the years since the film has been released, but there were many people that today suggest that The Day the Earth Stood Still basically was the reason of so many contactee movements in the UFO field in the mid-50s. Famous people today, or infamous, depending upon your point of view, people like George Van Tassel or George Adamski, who claimed that they had met space people in the desert and they were here to warn us about atomic war and so forth.
Well, I suppose that might have been something that planted that. There have been those repeated sightings. I've talked to a couple of people myself. I'm a great believer in the existence of UFOs. I think for us to sit here on our nice little earth thinking that we're the only possible intelligence is all oh, the universe or the universes beyond up there is unbelievably egotistical. And so I believe it, and I'd love to see them. I have met a couple of people. I remember being down at Palm Springs once about 20 years ago now, and at a party, a gathering, not a UFO gathering, but a guy gathering, I started talking to this man who was a doctor, and he had seen them. Maybe he stood still and was a firm believer, and then that gave me a very graphic detail of what he considered a UFO that he had seen. He didn't have any contact with it, but what he had seen in the sky, he said there's no doubt that it was a UFO.
Mr. Wise, my name is Dwight Schultz. I'm here in the studio, too. I am a big fan of yours.
I remember
seeing that motion picture in the early 50s with my grandfather, and it had a profound effect on me. I think a lot of people from that generation, kids from that generation, were affected by this film because of the seriousness with which you approached the subject. And I really want to express my appreciation.
Well, I think one of the reasons, thank you very much for those comments, one of the reasons I think that it was effective was it was earthbound. It took place right here on Earth. It's right in Washington, D.C., our capital, where we shot all the exteriors, all the meaningful exteriors. I think that setting and that background and all the way we approached it and did it gave unusual authenticity and credibility to this story.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
In your position back then, today you are ridiculed if you give this subject any credence.
But you think so? You think we're going back?
I do. Now, was there a sense of ridicule at that time?
I don't think so. I didn't sense it. I didn't sense it with audiences or the.
This is what astounds me.
Why is it remained such a kind of classic over the years? I go out to film festivals very often. Reality, they'll show maybe want to show half a dozen of my films. They one of them they always want to show is the Dave Eastwood film.
Well,
there's such a great following. There's a new poster out on the show. I don't know if you've seen it or not.
There's a new what?
New poster.
A new poster? Oh, now, is it true?
Yes, absolutely. I autographed 1,000 of them for a company.
Has the film been remastered, and is it going to be released?
It's going to be. They're going to do a new letterbox on it. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
I just had lunch last Friday with the man for 20th Century Fox Video, and he was telling me that they were going to put a new one out, and I told him I wanted to be involved in it and help supervise that mastering of that.
Oh, that would be fabulous.
You know, Mr. Wise, in 1951, when the film came out, of course, this country was basically in the midst of a mania. The House of Un-American Activities, Senator Joe McCarthy, people, actors, writers were being blacklisted left and right. There was a real hysteria in this nation.
Right.
Now, I was too young to remember all this in 1951, but I wanted to ask you, the tone of your film basically was peace.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
let's do away with the atomic bomb, because basically we're doing nothing more than holding a gun to our head. Did you get any feedback or any suggestion from the government or governmental sources that they were disturbed by this?
No, there's only two things. One thing, I've been asked many times about Daryl Zadig was running the studio then. He was head of production there, running the studio. And he had been a colonel or general at the end of the war. He was in service and a very high-ranking officer. And I've been asked many times if he had any questions about possibly doing this sort of subject matter. And he had none whatsoever. He saw the film when we got it done, thought it was excellent, and liked everything about it, and said, let's get it out there. Now, where we did run into it, we thought maybe we could get a little bit of help from the government in a couple of things, you know. Like those tanks back in Washington and the troops in Washington, the jeeps and all that we needed when we shot back there. But of course, if you want anything from the armed services, they have to read your script. And they read our script to turn us down.
Oh, is that right?
They obviously didn't like what we were saying. But we had a 20th Century Fox that was their point man in Washington at that time. So he got a very bright idea and went over to the National Guard in Washington. And gave them the script, they had no problem with it. So all the equipment you see there, the soldiers you see are actually the National Guard people, not actual army. But that's an indication of how they felt about what we were saying in the script.
Well, there was more than one way to skin a
There usually is, unless you need a battleship or something. That's another thing.
Well, tell me, Mr. Wise, during this time period, were there any suggestions that this film might go in a different direction because of the reports that were coming out then in the actual news about this subject?
No, nothing has changed. It was very much as the first draft script was very close to what we finally got up on the screen, and with the exception of the Army turning it down because we weren't as good from them, there was nothing, anything negative or anything changed or anything modified or anything because of what was happening with some of the UFOs at the time. Not changed at all.
Well, I'm sorry, Dwight.
No. The actors themselves, Patricia Neal, who was just fabulous.
Yeah, she's lovely.
I mean, Sam Jaffe.
Yeah.
I mean, marvelous, marvelous actors. Was there a sense that people could possibly be in this is science fiction, yes, but were the other actors, did they believe that this was possible?
I think they believed it was possible. I never got into any heavy discussions with them, but I think they all, whether they thought that it was literally possible that somebody could come out of space like that, they all believed very much in the message of the film.
Now
let's do away with our atomic warfare.
Now this is a question that's off the subject just slightly. It's a trivia question. It's one I'm very interested in this subject. Is it true that the actor who played Gort had a bad back and could not put Patricia Neal down or pick her up?
That's right. It wasn't that he had a bad back, but that was a foam rubber suit that was aluminum paint except for the helmet, and he had to be zipped into it, you see. And he didn't want to stay in there 20, 30 minutes because it was a very, very difficult thing. And he was a giant of a man, but he was not like our 7-foot athletes today, you know. He's not a strong man.
I will never, ever forget when the visor on Gort's helmet first open. You see that. I mean, as a kid, you know, I was stunned. And when it's amazing, you know, everybody says, well, it's a cliche today, but this was the first when the presses, the newspaper presses stopped and everything stopped.
The
audience, you could feel, you know, as a kid, it had such a profound effect on me.
Right.
For a half hour.
It was a very good stunt, I thought.
From 12 to 12:30.
I'd like to be able to do it.
I loved the scene with Sam Jaffe. You mentioned Sam, who was so marvelous playing the Einstein character.
Yes.
And when Klaatu suggested he could do something, you know.
Well, you know,
jaw drops.
I don't know whether it's apocryphal or not, but a lot of people said when they talked about the making of the atomic bomb, Oppenheimer and Groves. Oppenheimer was supposedly working on an equation, and Groves was a physicist, and Groves came in and erased something on the board and put it up there, and this is supposed to be a true story actually. And Oppenheimer was, you know, very, very impressed because Groves was right. He actually corrected Oppenheimer.
He had the answer.
And when I was recently, again, I looked at the Day of the Earth Stood Still again, and I wondered about that. I wonder if that's where that came from.
I don't know. Maybe Eddie North, the screenwriter, got it from that. But I wasn't aware of it.
Great.
Okay, Mr. Wise, we have got to take a very quick commercial break.
Okay.
And if you will allow me to put you on hold here for just a second.
Sure.
All right, and when we come back, more with my guest, Mr. Robert Wise, director of The Day the Earth Stood Still, and many, many, many other classic movies. And you're going to have a chance to speak to him, and this is what you got to do.
If you'd like to join in tonight's conversation, and you happen to be within the 818-213 or 310 area code...
We are back with my guest, Mr. Robert Wise.
Yeah.
Mr. Wise, when this film was completed, was there ever a suggestion of doing something that would be a sequel?
Not at the time, no. There was, I think, some talk about doing something quite a number of years ago about doing a sequel. They called me through my agent, and I said I would be interested. I said, no, I'd done my piece, and that was it. I think that they got somebody to do a new story idea and whatnot, and nothing ever came of it. So,
Well, you know, I see a curious thing there from the aspect of the scientist in the day the Earth stood still and the scientist of today. There's almost today, in actual happenings, there's almost a universal avoidance of this subject or this idea of unidentified flying objects, whether they may be real, whether they may be from another star system or dimension today. Most scientists refuse to even look at it, but yet the scientists in your film were all terribly fascinated by this idea and were willing to go the mile. Why do you think sometimes real life falls so short of what's been portrayed in the movies?
I don't know. Maybe they're so deeply into the actual scientific work and whatnot that they just don't see the possibility of that. And those of us who are outside of that, and let our imaginations just roam and go, we don't find any problem with thinking that's quite possible. And I think that must be it.
One of the worst things you can ask a scientist is a question that he doesn't know. I've seen the egos in physics and astronomy. They're absolutely phenomenal. People complain about the entertainment business, but
they're very good sized egos there.
Yes, I think so. But they also have them in the sciences, and you find a lot of scientists trying to actually turn this subject into science when it is not. It is sociological. It's archaeological. What people see is not something necessarily that can be proved with an equation, but it has to do with our own our perceptions, the human being and his or her senses. Whereas a scientist wants to say, no, well, we couldn't get here from there, and so therefore you couldn't have seen it.
Yeah. Well, no,
let me point out to you, they're still trying to get messages from out there with the radio waves or whatever, you know?
Yes, they
have that business in Puerto Rico someplace down there. They have a tremendous big...
the array, yes.
But
surprisingly enough, 2 years ago when the SETI program was launched, or as they renamed it, High Resolution Microwave Survey, they didn't want that thing in there about searching for ET intelligence. It only ran a year before Congress cut the funds off. Now it's all volunteer donations that's keeping it going.
Yeah,
can you imagine
it's keeping it going, no more governmental.
No, none whatsoever.
But the fact that there must be enough people involved, scientists involved and whatnot, to think that there may be some kind of messages coming out there to keep it going no matter what. That's the funding's from.
Well, you know, our galaxy is so unbelievably vast. How could anyone doubt that there is other life out there?
Yeah, as I said earlier, I think that we have to have the greatest egos ever conceived to think that we human beings are the only ones this kind of nature and intelligence could exist.
Well,
come on.
I think that's why there is such a sense that the government is lying about what it says it believes. I have, I don't know if you know who Martin Gardner is. He's a physicist, a scientist.
I don't think so, no.
He's very famous. He's written a lot of books, scientific books, explaining relativity, dealing with relativity. And he says that UFOs can be explained as hoaxes, hallucinations, honest misidentifications of natural objects, meteors, Venus, balloons, conventional aircraft, satellites. It is anything except what we say.
He's got a block of some kind.
He does, exactly. And
he's
not
got a block.
It's so strong. And many of the debunkers in science are so overtly antagonistic that you get the feeling that they protest too much.
No, there's a genuine hostility there. No.
The big kind of shady air in my mind, if they are coming down to the point they can be seen, why aren't some of them landing? Well, why? I heard you, when I came on, you were talking about Roswell.
Yes.
I saw the film a couple of weeks ago. Yeah. And I was fascinated by it.
Are you familiar with the subject? I mean, It is. You see, I feel exactly as you do. I mean, the ego involved in saying that it hasn't happened, even on this Earth. I cannot believe that in the billions of years that we have not been visited in the past.
Even one of the biggest debunkers of the subject today, Dr. Carl Sagan, even admits that we may receive a visitation every 10,000 years or so. Mr. Wise, we're going to go to the phone lines. We've got some folks calling in here that would like to speak to you. Let's see. We are going to go to Dee, who's calling us from Paradise, California, and is joining us on satellite. Good evening, Dee.
Hi, how are you?
Very well.
I was curious. When we saw the movie The Aliens and the fire in the sky, they were much more forbidding than the Roswell aliens. And my question is, what is your sense of reality? Are they actually somewhere in between?
That's
well,
for you, not for me.
How do you know, right?
Well, you know, we could only speculate, Dee, but, you know, right now, this was a real treat to get Mr. Wise on here, and I want to kind of keep the conversations right now geared toward him and his film.
All right.
Okay.
I have an answer to your question.
Oh, you do?
Yes.
All right.
Wasn't the character's name Doctor?
No.
No.
Nope. I'm sorry, my dear. Yeah, I missed it. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, let's see. We're going to go to Jim, who's joining us from Eagle Rock on Century. Good evening,
Hi,
Jim.
Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm fine. You have a question for my guest this evening?
Yes, I do. Well, one aside first, real quick. Wasn't Paul Davies the answer to your question about
the
corner?
Oh, you won.
God.
Yes, Jim.
Paul's right.
I just wanted to show you the show.
Yes, sir.
Do I get a book?
You get a book, my friend.
Okay. Now to your guest. I love that, The Day the Earth Stood Still. That movie's one of my favorite movies.
Good, thank you.
It's so well done. There was a radio play for the Lux Theater of that same subject. It had Michael Rennie, but instead of the woman in the movie, it had Jean Peters playing her part. Did that count? Did the movie come first, or did the Lux Theater production of it come first?
I would imagine the movie came first, because when Michael did our film, he had just come to this country, and I'm sure that the radio show would have been done after.
Oh, okay.
All right. Was that it, Jim?
Yeah, that does it for now.
Okay. Thanks, Jim. And I've got your address.
That book will
be coming out to you.
Okay.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. We are going to go to, let's see, we've got Don from Simi Valley joining us on Comcast.
Hello.
Yes. Good evening. You're on the air with Mr. Robert Wise.
Hi. I knew the answer to the doctor question, but he beat me to it. I wanted to know how they came up with the Clactoon or the line that the woman had to say to Gort in order to keep from
Gort,
blown away.
Clactu, Barada, Nictu.
That's it. How did you come up with that?
That's from the fertile imagination of Edmund North, who was a screenwriter.
Hmm.
I don't know how he came together with those particular letters and the words, I don't know. If it's in the script when I read it, it's accepted. But that was a manufactured language.
Well, you know, when I was a young boy and I saw that film for the first time, Mr. Wise, on TV, I swore I was going to remember that forever, just on the off chance I had an alien encounter.
It's something that's in our language now. Every place I go, and somebody knows the film, they'll repeat those words to me.
It's true.
In fact, years and years ago, there was a telephone listing in San Francisco under that.
Oh, is that right?
Absolutely.
I've got a quick question for you. The name of the small boy
Billy
that was
Gray.
In the movie.
Billy Gray.
Pardon?
His name was Billy Gray.
Billy Gray, and he played on Father Knows Best.
Yeah, he was one of the best child actors I ever worked with. He was really so good. So
he was wonderful.
He was so quick.
Right. Well, thank you.
All right, and Don, thank you for your call.
Good night.
Good night. Let's go to, we've got our friend Dave from UKIPE on. Good evening, Dave.
Oh, what an honor it is to talk to one of the greatest actors of all times, Dwight Schultz, and one of the greatest directors of all times. Mr. Weiss, how are you?
Hi, thank you. How are you?
I need to tell you that when your movie came out, I was a young lad of 8 years old, and I saw that movie in the Jubal Theater in Tucson, Arizona, and we didn't know what it was, but my cousin and I thought it was interesting, and like Mr. Schultz said, when Gort opened up the visor and shot the beam out, I ducked under the seat, and my cousin flew out of the theater. I was afraid to get up and look over the seat because I didn't know what Gort was going to do next.
But it's phenomenal. I remember the theater. I saw it at the Vilma Theater on Bel-Air Road in Baltimore, Maryland. So it is amazing how I can remember where I was sitting in the movie theater at that moment.
I can remember the red little macrame on the seat in front of me. When I was
going to say, because the film was black and white, Dave. So.
Right, so who would think that 48 years later that I'd have the honor of talking to talking to you on the phone.
Technology.
And I have a question for actually all three of you. And, hey, you'll win another audio tape, Don. How does that sound?
All right.
What was the first major movie based on an actual UFO case?
Hmm. Oh, that was Donald Kehoe's book.
No, Donald Kehoe's book was never made into a movie.
Well, he was his advice and consulting caused a film to be made, Earth versus the Flying Saucers,
no,
in 1955.
No, on an actual case, Don.
Oh, okay. Betty and Barney Hill?
No.
Oops, I give up. Dwight?
I give up.
Dwight, you give up? Okay, well, we'll just let it roll for the next. Can I give the answer? Would you like for it to roll for a couple weeks?
Oh, let's let it roll.
Yeah.
Okay. And also on the letter that called about the
KNBC. We'll call you.
Also about the lady that called on the KNBC Area 51. She wondered where the other parts were.
Yes.
The reason that they had to cut it off after 2 days is because all their videotape was taken by the security forces up there at Area 51, and they didn't want to pay the fees to be able to use other stations' tapes.
Oh, was that right?
They made it a two-parter, right.
Amazing.
But the Roswell movie was absolutely tremendous, and they people are calling me. Mr. Weiss may not know that here it is 40 years later after seeing The Day the Earth Stood Still, and I'm director of the UFO Audio Video Clearinghouse, which actually collects footage of these crazy objects. And Walden Books has the Roswell book right at the checkout counter in every single store. You know they must have done a tie-in because that movie was going to be aired.
Absolutely. Yeah. Dave, I'm going to have to put you on hold. We are right now at the bottom
no
of
problem.
The hour. We've got to take a break. Mr. Wise,
yeah.
Hang on for just a second. I want to give our telephone numbers out again.
Okay, fine.
And we will be back with you in just a second. And we are back with my guest, Mr. Robert Wise. And, you know, before we go back to the phones, Mr. Wise,
yeah.
Dwight and I were just chatting very briefly here. When you did the Andromeda Strain back in the 70s, did you find it eerie when the AIDS virus and the AIDS, when this broke in the news? And, I mean, we were actually talking about potentially a virus that had the ability to completely wipe out the human race.
Yeah, that was it. That's one of the things I liked about the story. It was sort of putting down an indictment of biological warfare. We could have been gathering something from outer space that would be in that area.
Well, you know that there are...
When the AIDS came along, I didn't really make that connection.
There are many people today that believe... And a number of scientists and physicians that have been able to prove to their satisfaction that AIDS is a biogenetically created disease. Do you give any credence to that?
Well, I suppose they don't seem to be getting along very fast or very deeply at getting any kind of an answer or cure to it. So I think that might be a very, very, very reasonably believable kind of.
And Mr. Wise,
the origin of it,
when you did The Day the Earth Stood Still, you employed state-of-the-art special effects. How do you feel today when you see some of the magic that's on the screen? Do you get the itch to do another sci-fi film?
I don't think so at this point. Although I'm completely fascinated by what they're doing with special effects now. You know, really, it's quite extraordinary.
Yes, it is.
Okay, let's go back to the phones because all the lines are lit up. I mean, this looks like the Starship Enterprise here tonight, Mr. Wise.
Good.
And we got to get back to Dave. Dave, thanks for holding
on. No problem. Not only are all the lines lit, but it even took me an hour and a half to get through. And we have the speed dialing. I wanted to have the three of you... kind of kick this around in your head on a large scale basis, especially Mr. Weiss as a noted director and Mr. Schultz as a noted actor and Don as a noted UFO expert. If there were 350 witnesses to the Roswell incident, if the motion picture business, as Mr. Schultz said last week, is to obviously make a profit, why would the motion picture industry invest in something that is nothing but poppycock. Thick, i.e., weather balloons, meteors, showers.
Oh, that's easy, Dave. That's an easy question. To make a buck. To make a buck.
Oh, no. No, you're missing my point, Don, because if it was just to make a buck, we would have had 500 Little Rascal sequels. But we've had hundreds of UFO documentaries and shows, which what I'm really trying to do is trying to ask, if you look at this from a Phil Klass vein or a James Olberg vein, why waste our time with something, according to these experts, that doesn't exist? Why would movie studios spend millions of dollars?
Well, that's a good question,
Dave. Well, the Earth is still, it's still what we call science fiction. It didn't happen. It wasn't like Roswell, and yet it's gained a very popular film, and film catches people up constantly over
and Dave,
45 years.
Will you relay, Don? Well, ask Mr. Weiss why Mr. Rennie came in a UFO or a dish-shaped craft. Why didn't he come in a four-legged rocket ship?
Well, we just like the feel of the saucer. It was simpler for us to do and make believable.
And, you know, incidentally, I was giving a lecture out at the Santa Monica Museum of Flying back in February, actually, where I met Dwight out there at the lecture, and they had one of the models of that flying saucer on display out there.
Yeah, well, why don't you let me go? Put me on hold, Don, so I can give your producer the answer to the question. What was the first major UFO movie based on an actual
okay,
UFO
Dave,
case?
And we have all the other lines lit up. I got to get to them, but I'll put you on hold, and Darren can get that.
Good night, Dave.
Okay, let's see. We are going to go to Tony in Whittier, who's joining us from Sammons. Good evening, Tony. Do you have a question for my guest?
Yes, I do for your guest. Good evening, everybody. Dwight and Don again. And my question goes right to you there with that. I think it was Necto Plato Barato, wasn't it?
No.
Do I have it mixed up?
You have it mixed up.
Okay, and by virtue of the fact that he built that mechanism into the robot, doesn't that kind of show a little foresight that they were aware that maybe something would go wrong when they tried to share their information? Was that kind of what they were kind of trying to purvey?
Let's see. No, wait a minute. Hang on one second. Are you there, Mr. Wise?
Yeah.
Okay. When I put Dave on hold, I think I put you on hold. I'm sorry.
That could be it.
Did you get the question?
Yeah, but I didn't quite understand it.
No, what I was getting at was when they built that Necto Barato into the robot, so he would respond and I guess take his mission back to where he came from. Being that was built in advance, you know, it was like is that kind of like their way of trying to say that they had the foresight that something may go wrong when they tried to share the knowledge?
I would think so. I think they would have been like beyond what we would do. We anticipate any possible off direction something might go or something might get out of hand and go wrong, and they wanted somebody to stop it.
And the if I'm correct, I believe the robot was, in fact, there were a series of robots, and they were left to keep peace.
They were the
masters, actually.
Right.
Yeah. They had an alternative plan.
They were anticipating trouble.
Yeah. Right, yeah. Right.
And they were there to take care of it if trouble broke out.
Yeah, Roswell was a great movie. I saw that, and I was particularly tickled about the mention of it may have been monkeys.
Yeah, yeah.
In fact, even genetically altered monkeys. You know, that would be something that would be, you know, like...
Outside of Nazi concentration camps, there weren't too many people doing genetic research in 47. Hey, Tony, we've got to move along. I want to thank you for your call.
Great show, and that was the fantastic movie up there with Forbidden Planet and Earth versus the Flying Saucers. That was a Ray Harrison, I think, did the special effects on that, Earth versus the Flying Saucers, and you got to give that guy credit. He didn't have all the computers and stuff we do today with, like, that metal folding up on...
He was a genius, too.
That was great. Yeah, good night. Thanks for the
okay,
call.
Okay, Tony, you bet. Good night. Okay, let's go to... Let's see. We have John joining us from New York on satellite. Good evening, John.
Hi. Hi, guys. I'm Mr. Weiss. Yes. It's a real privilege to talk to you.
Yep.
David Austin still, I guess, is my and my wife's favorite movie every time it's on TV. If we're just going by the channels and it's on... It stops right there.
Good.
And I do have a question. Yeah. You almost touched on it before. The flying saucer, how big was it? It was a model, or were there more than one model for that?
The saucer that came in over the Mall in Washington and then landed all was all done by miniature animation. And then the full-size model, the full-size ship that everything was worked around on the ground was on the 20th Century Fox back lot, right here in Century City. My apartment is in Century City. Century City is right next to the 20th Century Fox studio and used to be the whole back lot. Where I could look out of my apartment window. I'm on the 23rd floor and look right down where I shot that, up in front of apartment houses and business buildings.
And that was probably just one half, I guess,
yeah,
right?
I think a little over a half, but probably a half, maybe two-thirds.
Yeah, yeah. And now, I'm trying to think about when it opened up.
Yeah. That was very tricky.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. At the time it was made, it seems like it was done. A lot of these movies at that time looked very phony.
Well,
and this did not look... It looked real.
Very carefully done, that whole piece that came out. And every time we had to move it and put it back in, we had to very, very carefully take time to tape it over, repaint,
so you could see no seam.
Couldn't see any seam.
Yeah, that's what I was wondering. How well that was done.
So that was done by just sort of carefully working over.
Yeah, because so many movies.
We tried not to bring it in and out many more times than we had to, because it was just a big job to make it look all one piece.
Yeah, I can't wait to tell my wife I spoke to you. I'm on the East Coast here, and she's sound asleep for a few hours already. And tomorrow I'm going to tell her, guess who I talked to last night?
You're a sleepyhead.
So, are you another guy that we ruin their Saturday night, John?
Everything stops. Everything stops Saturday night, that's it, and I look forward to it. That's the bad part. May I say one more thing I had thought
of? After a compliment like that, you bet.
Well, it's true. Has anybody noticed any changes in any of our presidents or anything? Whether they know anything when they become president as to maybe their religious beliefs or anything changing?
I haven't been aware of it, particularly. Have you?
You know, I wonder sometimes if even a president knows what, or they only know as a need to know.
Well, you know, John, that's something else that's extraordinarily difficult to answer. But I can tell you
that
you
have to talk about now, Mr. Weiss.
Let me say this: that Dwight and I have discussed the Jimmy Carter situation, and if you make a note and remember to call up, let's say perhaps next week or the week after, we'll tell you about that.
Okay.
Okay.
Good.
All right, John. Thank you.
Enjoy it. Thank you. Bye.
You bet. Okay, let's see. We have Herb. Oh, our good friend Herb Hughes from Burbank is joining us on Salmons. Good evening, Herb.
Hi, good evening.
Good evening.
Mr. Wise.
Yeah.
Nice to hear you and to hear your voice. I, like everybody else, has admired that film from the day I saw it when I was young and lived up in North
Carolina. Everybody's young.
Matter of fact, I have been working at Fox Studios right now on stage 17, so you can look down and give us a wave Monday afternoon.
Is that right, Mr. Wise? You just had a birthday?
I will have, September 10th.
Is that right? Well, by golly, let me be the first to wish you a very happy one.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Wise, did you see the film Roswell?
Yes, I saw it at the showing up in the Directors Guild. I know Paul Davids, who was one of the guys that got it going, and Jeremy Kagan, who directed, is a good friend of mine.
Did you recognize one of the people sitting at the table?
I was very impressed by it. I liked it very much.
I said, did you recognize one of the people sitting at the table when they were talking about what the effect would be on the people? There was one particular gentleman there that I'm sure you must know.
Arthur Hiller.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, he took my place. I was supposed to be in it.
Oh, for heaven's
sake. Jeremy called me about it, but I was going to be out of town when they were shooting it.
I spent a little time over at Disney's, and he did several films over there, and he and I became quite well acquainted.
I
was surprised to see him in it and very happy to see him in it.
Yeah.
But you added another little insight, which is quite nice.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Well, Herb, I want to thank you.
There's a future question for you. Later on, the famous director was in the picture.
All right, I want to thank you.
I'll move out. Good night.
You bet.
Okay, good
evening. Keep looking up. Okay, let's see. We have Tony from Whittier joining us. Good evening, Tony. Are you there?
Hello, this is John?
Yes. You're on the air with myself, Dwight Schultz, and Mr. Robert Wise.
First, I'd like to make a comment to Mr. Dwight.
Yes.
I thought it was a shame that he wasn't in the last episode. A lot of my friends think so, too.
Oh, you're talking about Star Trek?
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you very much. I think it was a shame, too.
I think you're one of the, I think you're one of the better characters.
Well, thanks a lot. Things come and things go. You move on.
Yeah, and we're moving on now. Did you have a question for Mr. Wise, Tony?
Yeah, John. It's John.
Oh, I'm sorry, John. Did you have a question for Mr. Wise?
Yeah, he said he was talking about, they're talking about remastering Data Earth still.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
If they're also going to put on LaserDisc, a perfect thing, I know a lot of people would appreciate it, is the audio commentary on the one second.
Yeah, so as a matter of fact, I mentioned I just had lunch with Dave Goldstein from Fox Video last Friday. I was meeting about something else when this came up, and he said they were going to do it. He said, I told him I wanted to be involved and participate in it, so it would be great. So I'd love to get a track on it.
That would be great.
I expect if I'm in town here and available that we'll be doing that.
Excellent news.
The other thing, you know, I think I will be so good about it is that Marvel's score of Bernard Herrmann, which I think contributed so much to the film. That was the first use of the film as an instrument.
Did the thing precede your
I can't remember now.
I think Day of the Earth Stood Still, and then Howard Hawks came out with the thing.
Well, I
believe so. They're very close together.
Very close. But
I thought Bernard Herrmann's score was just such a plus for the film.
His music consistently over the years. The Hitchcock films that he did.
Of course, I first knew him because I was a film editor, you know, as soon as it came, and Magnificent Amberson.
He did the score
for both of those. So I knew Bernie from those days.
Wow. Okay. Well, you know, John, I want to apologize. There was a wrong name up there. You're a caller from across the border in Canada, joining us on satellite. Do many of your friends up there receive us?
Honestly, don't know. I'm usually the person around here that usually condones UFO because I just tell them what does UFO stands for.
Okay. Very good. Well, look, we are right now.
I just have a real quick question for him.
Okay.
What kind of conditions are the original film elements in? I know a lot of old films, original elements are in pretty bad shape.
I don't know. I really don't have any knowledge directly of that, but I would imagine they're in decent enough shape or they will work to get them in as good a shape as they can. You know, film deteriorates, even the negative, so it can't, I suppose, ever be as good as it was originally, but one thing that helps being in black and white, you know, if it were in color, it would be a bigger problem.
Okay, very good. John, we have got to move along. I want to thank you for your call. And we are, Mr. Wise, we're going to have to take a very quick break. We're running just a little bit over right now on taking our break, so let me put you on hold. And for you folks that have been trying to get in, we've got some open lines. Now's your chance. This is what you do.
On 800-336-CABLE.
And we are back, and that is some of that fantastic music.
Yeah, I heard the
statement
there, yeah.
Can I, Mr. Wise, when this film was released, now, was the last Laserdisc edition was in stereo. Was this film a stereo release?
No.
It was mono.
We didn't do stereo this
day. You know, Mr. Wise, just recently, your film, The Day the Earth Stood Still, has got to be my absolute all-time favorite. My other I'm very fond of it, is Howard Hawks' The Thing.
Yeah.
And recently I was surprised to see on one of the cable channels that play old movies had a colorized version of The Thing. I couldn't believe it. Have anybody suggested to you that they wanted to colorize The Day the Earth Stood Still? And what's the feeling on that?
I'll tell you one thing. I would be the last one to know, you see.
Yeah.
We have no say on that at all. All of us in the Directors Guild are fighting like mad at that whole process. We think it's absolutely false and bastardizing our films. They should be kept in their original form.
Yes.
But I wouldn't know if there were any plans of it. I'm sure that this new one's coming out. I'm going to work on it. It will not be colorized. And I won't have anything to do with it. It's colorized.
Uh-huh.
And I'm sure nothing was said about that when I met with them, the fellows at Fox. I'm sure it's going to be... They recognize how popular the original is, and it's good, solid black and white. They'll make every effort to get the very best reproduction of that black and white on the new laser disc.
Okay, let's go back to the East Coast. We've got Angela calling us from Falls Church, Virginia. Good evening, Angela.
Oh, good evening.
You're on the air.
Hi. Good evening to everyone. I want to say this is certainly an honor. I will tell you, I was not born when the Day the Earth Stood Still came out. I cannot tell you. My mother, that is her favorite. That is her all-time favorite. So I don't know if that's available in video stores or...
Oh, yes.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
I will be there tomorrow, first thing. It's one right up the street from me. And I just wanted to make a couple...
You are in for a treat, my dear.
I have seen pieces of it, and I can remember, you know, the robot standing there and the visor... opening up. So I have seen pieces of it, and I must say I had never watched it, but I will never do that again.
You are in for a treat. I truly envy you for the first time seeing this film.
Mm. Oh, yeah. I am going to sit down because my mother had, I mean, she rants and raves about that movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still. She just thinks that's one of the best movies that...
Well, you want to tell her to tune into this show, Angela.
I will tell her, and I just want to make a couple of quick comments. I just started picking you guys up. Actually, I've been listening for the past month. I never knew that there was such a show, and I've been trying to get a couple of people here in the Washington, D.C. area to listen to it, because I have other friends, and we love to talk about UFOs. And also, I was raised on a couple of Frank Edwards books back during the 60s.
Oh, yes.
So I have a lot of appreciation for what you guys talk about, and I know that there is something out there.
Welcome to the family.
Thank you.
Okay, was there...
Yeah,
was,
oh, the last question I wanted to ask Mr. Wise, when is the movie, the remastering of the movie, when is that going to be released?
I don't know, not for a few months. I don't know if it's going to be done this year or early next year.
Okay.
I wasn't given any dates. I just was told Friday that there really was a work to do it.
Okay. Well, I'm glad to know that, and believe me, Mr. Wise, I will see that movie. I will do like my mother told me to do.
Do that. See it from the beginning and turn the phones off. Don't let anybody interrupt you. Just see it all the way through.
Okay, and this has been an honor. And wait,
Angela, I want to thank you for calling in. This is your first call?
This is my first call.
All right.
My first listen, and I will be calling again in the
then
future.
Then let me say this. I want you to keep your eyes to the skies and
listening. Okay, thanks a lot, Don.
You bet. Bye-bye. Okay, that was a nice surprise. It's always
nice.
Great to get a first-time caller.
Yeah,
always great to get a first-time caller. I am going to go, let me see, I'm going to go to Tim, who's calling us from Burbank, beautiful downtown Burbank. Good evening, Tim.
Hi, how are you, Don?
Just fine.
Great. I want to tell you, I have a great show, and I listen to you all the time.
Well, thank you.
And I want to direct my question to Mr. Wise. I'm a screenwriter, and your work inspired me so much through my life. Your work of editing Citizen Kane and your films like The Haunting and Somebody Up There Likes Me and The Day the Earth Stood Still. But I really want to tell you, when I was 9 years old, the film that changed my life was West Side Story.
I saw that at the Northwood Theater.
Well, you're a jet, right?
Oh, it was just incredible. Yes, I'm a jet. that is, and every now and then, the Cinerama Dome here in Hollywood replays it at 70mm, and I'm always
nothing
there.
Like seeing it on the big screen.
No,
yes,
nothing.
On the big screen here in Hollywood, yeah. And I just want to tell you, it's a fantastic film, and it's I own a copy, I never miss it when it's playing. And I just wanted to thank you for making that movie.
Well, you know, speaking of owning a copy, one of my listeners a couple of months ago sent me a copy of The Day the Earth Stood Still. He called me at the office, and we were talking about sci-fi movies, and I told him how much I loved that. He turned around and bought me a copy and sent it to me. I just couldn't believe it.
Wow. I wanted to ask Mr. Wise, Russ Tamblyn was in The Haunting and West Side Story. Yeah. Was he interesting to work with?
Oh, yeah, Russ was a lovely guy.
Yeah,
and very good, very, very, very prepared, professional, and very effective, very good when he's cast in the right role. And I still see Russ every so often.
Oh, well, he was great in the Twin Peaks show.
Oh, yes.
Well, thank you very much, Don.
Well,
Russ,
Tim.
My own personal favorites, The Haunting.
The Haunting is fantastic. It just came out on tape, and I bought a copy of that.
Right.
Well, Tim, I want to thank you for your call. Please keep listening and keep looking up.
I will.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
We have Roxy in Calamasa joining us on TCI. Good evening. Are you there?
Yes.
Roxy, you're on the air. Hello, Ed.
Yes, hello.
Yes, you're on the air, my dear.
Can you tell me, on the Roswell movie, the beginning of it, all those UFO shots, are those real?
Yes, as a matter of fact, they were donated by our very good friend Video Dave, who was just on a little bit ago. But look, Roxy, we have Mr. Robert Wise on, and I want to keep those questions directed to him. Did you have a question for Mr. Wise?
No, that's all right.
All right, thank you, my dear.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay,
let's go to John in Shadow Hills, who's calling us on King. Good evening, John, and turn down your TV.
Shadow Hills.
Yes. You got to turn your TV down. John?
Hi, Don. How are you?
I'm fine.
Hey, I'd like to ask Mr. Weiss a couple of questions.
Yes.
Of course, he was great with the movie Citizen Kane. Everybody knows that. What I'd like to know is, what inspired him to make a movie, direct a movie, The Day the Earth Stood Still, only about, 2.5 years after Roswell? I mean, was there a screenplay or a book?
We spoke about that earlier. It came from a short story, and then Edmund North, the screenwriter and the producer, and I made a screenplay out of it. It came from a short story. Fiction short story, of course. What its time was in relation to Roswell, I can't tell you right now.
John, you're going to have to turn down your TV or I'm going to have to disconnect because we're getting feedback.
Okay. So it was a short story that happened
Okay. Let's move along here. We've got a couple of open lines, and we've got about 2.5 minutes if you've been trying to get in, and the phones have been busy. Now is your chance. Mr. Wise, out of all the films that that you have directed and you've done over the years, did you say The Haunting is one of your favorites?
Yeah, The Haunting. I don't know if you know that film.
Oh, yes.
Yep. I've had so many people say to me over the years, Mr. Wise, you made the scariest film I've ever seen, and you didn't show anything. How'd you do it?
That's
one of my... I've done 39 films. And I've asked very often if I have a single favorite. I don't have a single favorite. I don't know whether most directors do or not, but I've got maybe a dozen out of that 39 favorites, particular favorites of one reason or another. And Day the Earth Stood Still is one of them, of course, and The Haunting is another one.
Well, you know, now in the sci-fi genre, which you absolutely, totally shine in, what was one of your favorite, or what was your favorite film in the sci-fi genre, other than The Day the Earth Stood Still? My favorite of yours was Star Trek, the movie. A lot of people, for whatever reason, didn't care for that film. I liked it.
Well, a lot of people have told me that over the years since it came out. I don't know, maybe because of a rather different kind of expectations since it was the first one made after the TV series and all. But I've had, as I say, a number of people who are Trekkies and all say, hey, you know, that picture was not given as high a rating as it should have been by a lot of people when it came out.
Well, you know, you launched an entire legendary process.
Well, sure, we've done 6 or 7 of them.
Yes.
Doing a new one, I guess.
Yes, sir.
I've done the 3 science fictions. Day the Earth Stood Still, The Andromeda Strain, and Star Trek. And my favorite is still Day the Earth Stood Still.
What makes you so special, Mr. Wise? A lot of actors are called versatile, but directors tend at times to, as many actors do, to focus on one genre. But you have made the best in every area.
Well, I like to do two other changes. Vary my palette. You don't like to do the same thing all the time.
Okay, we're almost out of time. Let's see. We've got... Let me see if I have room for one more quick call. David in Palmdale on Jones. David, do you have a question for Mr. Wise? And if so, make it quick.
Yes, Mr. Wise, number one, thank you very much for an incredible film.
Right.
It's moved me all my life. Aside from the UFO aspect of the film, I have always seen it as the ultimate statement for hope.
Yes.
As far as human species is concerned, there was a warning at the end of the movie.
Yeah.
And also a indication that they would come back and check up on it.
Yep.
And it seems to me that is the perfect opening for a sequel to the film. And believe it or not, a few years ago, I actually woke up in the middle of a dream about such a sequel. And I won't go on and on and say, here's my script and all that nonsense. But, the scene with the ramp...
Come on, David, you know you want to.
Oh, well, sure.
But I suppose sometime down the line, somebody will do that. I guess it's just something that, you know, I haven't done my piece of... I'll leave it to somebody else if they want to do that.
Okay, David, we are out of time. I want to thank you for your call. Keep listening, keep looking up. And Mr. Wise, we're down literally to seconds.
Yeah, I'm trying to tell me something. Where does one listen to your program?
Well, sir, it's available on the cable radio network. It's available nationwide. It's available on...
Well, I mean, my radio, where do I get it?
Well, I'll tell you what. Let me keep you on the line here as soon as I sign off, and I'll give you all that information.
Well, I wish you'd send it to me.
Okay.
Can you do that?
Yes, sir, we can do
Fax
that.
Fax it to my office or something?
Yes, sir, I'd be happy
I'm not
to
sure that I'll become a regular listener, but I might like to tune in once in a while.
Well, it would certainly be an honor and a privilege to have you do that. I want to thank you. Dwight and I both want to thank you for a wonderful hour.
Well, sure, I enjoyed it very much.
I would love to have you do it again when you could do a whole show with us, if that would be possible.
Okay, but I'm getting tired right now. How long does the show run? My ear hurts a little.
It's just 2 hours.
Okay. Maybe another time.
Okay, sir. I want to thank you so much.
Fine, I've enjoyed it.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you for inviting me.
And we'll send that information.
Do that, yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for another week. Dwight and I would both like to thank you for tuning in. Next week, right here on the Cable Radio Network, we are going to be joined by Richard Hoagland. We're going to be talking about his lunar photos and lunar interpretations. If you were around a few weeks ago and you heard Jim Sylvan, now we're going to get the story from the other side, Dick Hoagland and the Moon-Mars connection, a week from tonight. My name is Don Ecker. The show is UFOs Tonight. You've been listening to the Cable Radio Network. Keep those eyes to the skies, and hey, we'll be back in a week. Here's the music.